Bhuta Papmanas Vairena Bhuta Papmanas Tam Apur Anuchintaya Tam Apur Anuchintaya. Evam Krishne Bhagavati Maya Manujaishvare Varena Puta Papmanas Tam Apur Anuchintaya. Thank you. Would you like to do it one more time? Thank you. Very nice. What a head start. Kita, the grass worm. Peshaskrita, by a bee. Ruda, confined. I'm in this habit of waiting for the translation. So. Kujayam, in a hole, in a wall. Tam, that, which is the bee. Anusvaran, thinking of. Samramba bhaya yogena, through intense fear and enmity. Vindate, attains. Tat of that bee. Swarupatam, the same form. Evam, thus. Krishne, in Krishna. Bhagavati, the personality of Godhead. Mayam Manuje, who appeared by his own energy in his eternal human-like form. Ishvare, the Supreme. Vairena, by enmity.
Putta papmana.
Those purified of sins.
Tam.
Him.
Apu.
Attained.
Anuchintaya.
By thinking of.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
A grass worm confined in a hole of a wall by a bee always thinks of the bee in fear of an enmity, and later becomes a bee simply because of such remembrance. Similarly, if the conditioned souls somehow or other think of Krishna, who is Satchitananda Vigraha, they will become free from their sins. Whether thinking of him as their worshipable Lord or an enemy, because of constantly thinking of him, they will regain their spiritual bodies.
You have to excuse the way I'm sitting. I can't sit cross-legged anymore. Old age.
Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 4:10, the Lord says, Vita raga baya krodha manmaya mam upashrita bahavo jnana tapasa puta mad bhavam agata. Being freed from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. End of the quote. There are two ways of constantly thinking of Krishna: as a devotee and as an enemy. A devotee, of course, by his knowledge and tapasya, becomes free from fear and anger and becomes a pure devotee. So a devotee, by his knowledge and by his tapasya, he becomes free of anger and becomes a pure devotee. Similarly, an enemy, although thinking of Krishna inimically, thinks of him constantly and also becomes purified. This is confirmed elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, verse 30, where the Lord says, Apichet sudarachiro bhajate mam ananya bhak sadur eva samantavya samyang vavastitohisa. Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he engages in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly, because he is properly situated. A devotee undoubtedly worships the Lord with rapt attention. Similarly, if an enemy, Sudarachara, always thinks of Krishna, he also becomes a purified devotee. The example given here concerns the grass worm that becomes bee-like because of constantly thinking of the bee that forces it to enter a hole. By always thinking of the bee in fear, the grass worm starts to become a bee. This is a practical example. Lord Krishna appears within the material world for two purposes: paritranaya sarunam, vinashaya cha driskritam, to protect the devotees and annihilate the demons. The sadhus and devotees certainly think of the Lord always, but Duskrititis, the demons like Kamsa and Shishupal, also think of Krishna in terms of killing him. By thinking of Krishna, both the demons and devotees attain liberation from the clutches of material maya. This verse uses the word maya manuje,
When Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appears in his original spiritual potency, Sambhavami Atma Mayaya, he is not forced to accept the form made of material nature. Therefore, the Lord is addressed as Ishvara, the controller of Maya. He is not controlled by Maya. When a demon continuously thinks of Krishna because of enmity towards him, he is certainly freed from the sinful reactions of his life. So even a demon is freed from the sinful reactions of their life by thinking of Krishna. To think of Krishna in any way, in terms of his name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, or anything pertaining to him, is beneficial for everyone. Srinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana. Thinking of Krishna, hearing the holy name of Krishna, or hearing the pastimes of Krishna will make one pure. Then he will become a devotee. Our Krishna consciousness movement is therefore trying to induce the system of somehow or other letting everyone hear the holy name of Krishna and take Krishna's prasadam. Thus, one will gradually become a devotee and his life will be successful. End of the purport. Om Agnatimirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmain Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimakte Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesa Sunyavadi Paschacharya Satarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Radhar Shivasari Gaur Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Kapa Tarubyas Cha Kripa Sindhu Veva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Nama. Before we discuss this verse, I just want to express my appreciation. Yesterday was the first time in my experience in 45 years that I ever heard a Vaishnavi give the Srimad Bhagavatam class. And it was very nice. And it just reinforces the truth of our teaching that for devotees, there's no distinction between male or female. And everyone has equal access to Krishna. Heck, even the demons have access to Krishna. So on that note, we'll begin. So very, very interesting, Narada Muni is speaking these verses, and he's explaining how really Krishna is equal to everyone, equally merciful. Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dvesho sinapriyaha ye bhajanti tamam bhakya mai te teshu chapyaham. He says that really I am equal. I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I mean, from Krishna's perspective, everything and everyone comes from him. And for him, there's no duality. And as the verse points out, he has no material body, no material mind. So he doesn't experience duality, he doesn't experience separation, he doesn't experience on one level as anyone being different from him. So he's equal. At the same time, he's a transcendental person and feels all emotions.
And so he says, if somebody worships me with love and is a friend, then I reciprocate with that person and I become a friend to him. But because Krishna is the supreme pure, whoever contacts him in whatever way becomes purified, just like the sun can purify even a filthy place if it's in contact with the sun. There's a real filthy place in San Francisco. It's very similar, I think, to the Bowery where Srila Prabhupada stayed in New York when he was first there. San Francisco, it's a small city, but a few blocks can be full of homeless people and drug addicts and ex-convicts. And you can go a few more blocks and you can be around some of the richest, most expensive hotels in the city. And I used to work as a paramedic on an ambulance for 20 years. And I spent a lot of time at Sixth and Mission, which was the center of alcoholism in the universe, it seemed like. And people are always urinating there. But somehow or other, it also, that area of the city is also, gets a lot of sun. Yeah, the different parts of the city, some parts are foggy and they don't get much sun. Some parts of the city are very, it's always sunny there. And a lot of times I could see how the sun was just purifying that area in spite of it being so filthy. What's that verse in the Puranas? Om Apavitra Apavitro Va Yatsmare Pundarikaksham Abhantayam Suchi. So it says, you may be pure or you may be impure. And as you're going through this world, if you remember the lotus eyed Supreme Personality of Godhead, you will become pure internally and externally. And so Narada Muni, he's giving this example of the grass worm, which I don't have any experience of. Is there such a thing in India? Or anyway, I guess in the food chain, the grass worm is food for the bee, or maybe the wasp. And the wasp has a way of capturing the worm and sticking it in a hole to come back and feast on later. I imagine this is how it works. You can just imagine yourself being a little grass worm in the hole and this wasp is flying around looking at you and smacking its lips. Dinner. How petrified with fear you'd be. Completely absorbed. When is that wasp going to come and eat me? So that we call spontaneous negative attraction. Where the pure devotees of the Lord, they're also thinking of Krishna, but out of love and out of just spontaneous attraction, effortlessly. Like if someone's coming to kill you, you don't have to make any effort to think about it, right? You can't stop thinking about it. No effort. So the spontaneous level of bhakti is an effortless remembrance of the Lord. There's no sadhana at that point. But either way, when we contact the Lord by either hearing, chanting, remembering, any contact, there's, even if it's in enmity or fear, there's a purifying effect. And one of the effects that's mentioned here in the purport is that one becomes freed of all sins. And we know from the teaching that in the chanting of the holy name, there's different stages that one goes through. And there's the pure chanting of the holy name, where one is actually perceiving that Krishna is present in the name. And that's considered to the full light of the sun having risen. But then there may be chanting where we're not actually feeling and tasting our relationship with the Lord as we're chanting, but we're trying to. After Mangal Arati this morning, there was an announcement, and then they were reading something that Srila Prabhupada had said, comparing devotional service to a mango. And we've heard this. I've also heard this letter in a letter that Prabhupada once wrote to a devotee, where the devotee was saying to Srila Prabhupada, the devotee was lamenting, said, Srila Prabhupada, I really want to become a pure devotee, but I just feel it's impossible. And Prabhupada wrote back to him and said that wanting to become a pure devotee and actually being a pure devotee are the same thing. And then he gave the comparison to a mango, that whether the mango is green or the mango is ripe, would that be yellow? I'm colorblind. Yes, you know, so you have a green mango, which is not ripe, and then you have a yellow mango that's sweet and ripe. Both are mangoes. So either way. So he said, either way, devotional service is good, whether it's immature or mature. Because one is connected to Krishna, that is something. It's not nothing. Even Prabhupada quoted the verse, Abhichet Sudaracharo, Bhajate Mama Nanyabhak, Sadhureva Samantavya Samyag Vyavyasti Tohisa. Even a neophyte, or the comparison here, actually, Prabhupada used this sloka in comparison to a demon. What to speak of someone who is a devotee, but is still a dharacha, full of bad qualities, sinful tendencies. And so when we come to Krishna consciousness, we have sinful tendencies. But if one is engaged in devotional service, Krishna is giving an order to Arjuna and to all of us that we have to be very mindful of, that anyone who is trying to become Krishna consciousness, Krishna says you have to consider him as a sadhu. And how many times in the Bhagavad Gita do we find the word sadhu used by Krishna? Not very much. I can't think of too many verses where Krishna uses the word sadhu. So he says anyone who is trying to become Krishna conscious, even though they're neophyte and full of all kinds of bad tendencies still, you have to look at them as a sadhu. Why is that? Because Krishna is supreme. And anyone who honors that, anyone who recognizes Krishna's supremacy is higher than even the most advanced impersonalist yogi. It's really a great thing, because Krishna is great. And so anyone who wants to surrender to Krishna, even a neophyte, is great. And if we appreciate that quality in a devotee, you know, if we're a bee going for the honey, as opposed to a fly going for you know what, we're actually honoring Krishna. You know, when we appreciate Krishna's devotional service, and when we appreciate anyone who has taken up that service, then Krishna is pleased. Yeah. And just the reverse, if we're a fly, just looking externally at the illusory qualities of a so-called conditioned soul, as Vaisheshika Prabhu often says, he says, when we When we honor the good qualities in others, we get those qualities ourselves. And similarly, when we focus on the negative qualities of someone, we imbibe that. Yeah. And actually, immediately, our mind is full of, in Japanese they say, gomi, garbage. I haven't learned that word yet in Chinese, working on it. Laji. Yeah, so we don't want any laji in this heart. No more gomi. Because Krishna also is living in there, yeah, so we want to keep it nice. But who takes care of that area? Who's in charge of that place? Who's responsible for it? Do we say to Krishna, please kick out the gomi? We keep pulling it in there. Or do we say to the holy name, please kick it out? We're the one who's bringing it in and holding it there. So anyway, even the neophyte, even the beginner in Krishna consciousness, by contacting the holy name, contacting the devotees, hearing Krishna's pastimes, we begin this process of purification. And one of the first things that begins to happen is that one becomes freed of all sins. Even the demons become freed of all sins. And sins, they come in different stages, right? So we have sins from our past that are unmanifest. We have sins that are in a seed-like form. And then we have sins that are just about ready to open. And then we have sins that are already coming, you know, which basically are this mind and body. But we can actually observe this, we can observe the sinful reactions coming to us and their effect upon us, especially in the neophyte stage. Because really what sins are our past impressions and our attachments to this and our aversions to that and our unconscious reaction to that, right? So, you know, the reason I'm attracted to women is because I have so many impressions from this life and from the last life of engaging in those in the Bhagavad Gita, that's how we remain identified and illusioned, is by this unconscious action reaction. Icha dvesha samutena Danva Mohina Bharata. What's the rest? So when this Icha Dvesha means I want it, I don't want it. Yeah. So when that comes up, and like a computer, the mind is there. Oh, whatever we see goes into our memory, and then that file is clicked on and it comes up. And not only that, our attachment and aversion to that also comes, and it's the mind and body are really one. It's generated within the body as a sensation, as a feeling. You know, when you think I want that, there's also a feeling there that's pushing, you know, somewhere in the body, either the tongue, the belly, or the genitals, something is stimulated there. Then the mind perceives that sensation. The sensation is generated by the mind, because the mind has an interpretation of whatever we're experiencing. That's what our conditioning is. I like it, I don't like it. That's not coming from the soul. The soul is just asleep watching a movie, unaware of itself, you know, totally absorbed, unconscious. Right? When we watch a movie or we get absorbed in checking our email or looking at Facebook, right, at that moment, we're not aware of ourself. That we're, to a certain degree, unconscious. We don't notice our existence in this moment. We're absorbed in the mind. So in that absorption, the mind, based on its conditioning, based on our, who we imagine ourselves to be, we all have this self-image, right? So based on how we imagine ourselves, according to that imagination, the ego, the false ego, there's an interpretation going on, right? So if I identify myself as a man, and especially if I'm a proud person like I am, and somebody interprets me, the person I imagine myself to be, and somebody criticizes me, I think, oh, very nice. I mean, actually, I think very bad. If I'm an advanced devotee, I think, oh, very nice, because no ego. But if I'm identified with the imaginary self, then there's an immediate interpretation, oh, this is terrible, and then a feeling of anger is generated, or a feeling of inferiority, or fear arises. That's the feeling that's generated by the mind according to its interpretation. Then the mind perceives the feeling that it created, that generated in the body, and thinks, oh, then it must be true, right? I feel like that, so it must be true. And you see this perfect little mouse trap that is created by Maya to keep us enslaved. So Krishna says, as long as this action and reaction is going on unconsciously, then basically we maintain it. In spite of that, when we begin to chant the holy name, even in this stage of non-boss, where there's not the full light of the holy name, but just the sun is starting to come up, there's this process of purification where we begin to become purified of this identification with the imaginary self and the mind and the body. We start to see we're something different. So that's the stage of purification of sins in a very practical way, because in one sense, if you're still experiencing the reaction of sin, what that in a practical way means is that we're still identifying with the mind and the body. We're still identified with that imaginary, the person I imagine myself to be. We're not actually seeing ourselves as the servant of Krishna. We're still thinking, I want to be Krishna in so many ways. But, so, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he explains that when we take shelter of a spiritual master and we begin to chant the holy name under his guidance, then we are engaged in sadhana bhakti. At different stages of sadhana bhakti, one becomes freed of sin or anartas that are generated from our past previous activities and experiences, from our attachments and aversions. At a certain stage at sadhana bhakti, gradually we become freed from those reactions, but on a subtle level it means that we're no longer affected by these impressions. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 2, verse 70, I forget the Sanskrit, maybe, does anyone know? Karnat, probably you have a loud voice. Can you speak out the English in a...
Similarly, one who is not disturbed by the flow of desires that are constantly entering can attain peace, and not one who tries to fulfill the desires.
Thank you. So these impressions we have in our mind from our past activities, you could say, or our sinful reactions, they're flowing like a river. You know, the Ganges is constantly moving. It's not that it stops. It's not that these impressions disappear. But we no longer identify with them. We're absorbed in the self in our relationship with Krishna. We're no longer lost in the movie going on in the mind. And so in that's actual freedom from the reaction. When we no longer identify. So on a gross level, we're getting reactions in the body, but on a subtle level, those reactions are continuing to flow in the mind. So one way we can ascertain our advancement in Krishna consciousness is to observe the degree that we still identify with this imaginary self and the contents, the impressions that are there flowing within the mind. You know, and how much are we unconsciously reacting and just maintaining the same behavior? Or how much are we actually observing the impression and the reaction that is creating within the body and then letting it go and not behaving like that anymore? I'm just noticing myself. One of my sinful tendencies is laziness. And I'm getting a little bit of mercy here in the jhana dealing with that, because every time I see Tulsi Devi, every time I see a devotee, every time I see the deities, it's a great opportunity for mercy, right? For me. Yeah. All I have to do is bow down. And sometimes I bow down, but I do one of those little hatchet obeisances that Prabhupada says, that if you just bow down and you don't actually glorify the spiritual master or the Lord, if you don't actually say something, it's actually an offense. Mm-hmm. But if you bow down and consciously pay your obeisances, intentionally, consciously, then the full effect is there. But I have this tendency to either just go, or like that, you know, hatchet. And unconscious, mechanical. So, not so much. And so I have this tendency. But sometimes I recognize the tendency. And I feel, I can actually feel the resistance or the, it's a feeling of laziness, like, all right. And then once I see it, once you can observe it, then you, at that moment, you have a choice. Are you going to continue to follow that unconsciously, that pattern of laziness, or criticism, whatever it may be? Or are you going to choose to pay your obeisances with full consciousness, or give up criticizing, or instead of seeing the doo-doo, the honey, look at the honey in that devotee, right? Instead of smelling over here, smell over here. And so we only have a choice when we're conscious. That's when we have an opportunity to exercise our free will. Otherwise, to the degree that we're unconscious and we're not aware of these anartas, coming as our past attachments and aversions, to that degree we actually maintain them to a certain degree. And the process of purification takes longer. It's not that the purification stops, but the more conscious we become and the more we exercise our free will properly to surrender to Krishna, then the faster the process goes on, up to the point where there's a certain point in devotional service when we come to the stage of nishta, where, you know, all the tendencies are still there, but now we can see them and we don't act upon them. But still there's effort to think of Krishna and to chant Krishna. Prabhupada quotes the verse here, Srinivatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Ridantaksto Bhadrani Virunoti Suritsitam. This hearing and chanting is very purifying because the Lord is situated within the heart. And it's said that when we properly hear and chant, and we're very honest, then the Lord cleans our heart. And in the purport, Prabhupada mentions that we have to, he explains what properly hearing means. He says, with attention and with reverence. Another way Prabhupada has mentioned hearing is that to, when you're chanting, to know that you're chanting, to be aware of your own presence as you're chanting. I'm offering my attention, my presence to Krishna, just like we offer to our friends, the persons we love. We give them our attention. When we give someone our attention, we're actually giving our love. And if we're talking to someone and they're not giving our attention, or they're looking at their watch or whatever, we feel just the opposite. We don't feel their love. We feel like, oh, they don't care about me. And then we feel hurt, and maybe even angry. So Prabhupada says, chanting, when you're chanting, to know, to be aware that you're chanting, to be there, not be somewhere else. In that kind of chanting, we call this the clearing stage in chanting. So in Nam Aparad, practically there's no light. But in Nam Bas, where you're aware of the 10 offenses in chanting, but you're trying your best to avoid them. First you have to know what they are, right? If you don't know what they are, you can't really avoid them. And we have to constantly check and see. Okay.